It gives me great pleasure to have as my guest today Dr. Stanley Mims, a retired educator who has obtained enormous success in his field of specialty. Greetings, Dr. Mims.
Greetings to you.
Listen, I'm happy to have you on the show today, man, and just happy to have the opportunity of reconnecting with you after so many years of separation and to know how God has been just blessing you on so many different levels. I do understand that you're retired right now, so how is it in the land of retirement?
Well, I've done retirement, I think, at least four times now. It becomes a cliche after a while, because when I step down from one project, I jump onto another.
Yeah.
I'm finding out that you've got to keep moving in terms of giving back, coaching, supporting individuals along the way, because you get the joys of you're reaching back and helping others move forward.
That is so good. That's so good. And then at the same time, you have a chance of choosing now what you want to
do. That is so true.
And you choose those things that, you know, best satisfy your passions and your needs. And that's fantastic, man. Before we get started today, Dr. Mims, allow me to introduce you to our listening audience. Dr. Mims has a doctorate of education in the areas of organization, development, and management science from the University of Columbia University out of New York City. He worked in the New York City Department of Education as a leadership coach consultant. He also rose to a level of distinction by being the superintendent of the Birmingham School District in Birmingham, Alabama, over 25,000 students, a $297 million annual budget, with 4,000 school employees. What a large hump. He was a chief executive officer in the East St. Louis School District, superintendent of schools in New York City Department of Education, District 9, Bronx, New York, and I can go on and on and on. What an impressive journey through life, Dr. Mims.
It's so scary that I have gone through all of that and survived.
Yeah,
I can't believe it. When you were saying that, I was like, is that me? Who's he talking about?
Well, I tell you, man, I have to take my hat off to you, because very few people rise to that level of accomplishments.
I'm so humble.
Yeah,
humble.
I mean, I'm telling
you. It makes it keeps you humble.
Yeah, I can imagine, man. I can imagine. And that's why you were able to go to where you had gone, because of that humility. Now, let me ask you, what was your motivation to go into the field of education?
I would say it was after observing the likes of the late Norita Marshall and her passion for all things teaching and learning. That was the catalyst that pushed me in that realm, because I was not interested in being a teacher in one part of my life. I was just interested in getting my degree and going on my way and make a contribution where I could in areas that could give me traction. But Norita Marshall, the late Dr. Norita Marshall, was the one that really focused me in that new field.
Yeah. Now, you know, I was reading your resume. Why organizational development and management science? Was that something that you stumbled on, or did you have a specific reason for majoring in those areas?
At Columbia University, let me dial that back. Teachers College is a part of Columbia University.
Yeah.
That's where I did my formal training for the doctorate and my second master's there.
Is that Barnard College? Is that
That's in New York City, Teachers College.
Okay.
Which is Columbia University satellite school. Okay. I would say that's, yeah, because we're affiliated with Columbia. I got interested in organization development from the standpoint of, after reviewing so many systems from a bureaucratic standpoint, as well as a private sectors, I wanted to understand, how does one move people, inspire people to get the work done? And organization development, you're looking at systems, you're looking at effectiveness, you're looking at accountability, and you're looking at profitability. What's your bottom line? So helping organizations to realize that you may not need all those the money that you think you need to get a project done, but if you just reshuffle the deck, as the proverbial cliche says, then you're able to get the traction you need to build capacity. So that helps me to understand how to build capacity.
That's beautiful.
And I really was excited about that.
Yeah, that's amazing, because human resources, I think, is the most valuable resource in any organization. The fact that you have human beings that you can train how to push work forward. Dollars are very significant. We don't want to minimize that. But the ability in terms of success and failure, I think to a large degree, borders around the fact of getting people effectively involved in whatever projects you're doing.
And to that point, as I like to call myself the organization development specialist in that sense, I always tell my clients that I'm doing coaching with now that if you pay your people well, because there's a strong correlation to work and performance, you will get the results you need. Coupled with the fact that you create an environment that clients or your employees feel comfortable being in every day, you will get the same, you'll get the traction. But if you pay them fair wage and give them room to grow, watch your successes continue to rise.
Amen. That's fantastic.
And you can see that with Delta Airlines. I just picked that out. I mean, you look at Delta. Delta Airlines really called upon, they anchor their work in being fair and treating their people with all kinds of value add, which encourages their people to really move forward and thrive in organization. I just picked it out because I follow them on the Wall Street Journal and in other articles.
You know what, Stanley? I read some time ago, and it was definitely some time ago, and there was even a documentary out about American teachers, and they were saying that a lot of teachers don't last, for 5 years, and they're underpaid, they're overworked. I don't know if the public school system affords teachers a kind of payment that you're describing. But I did read, and update me on that, but I did read some time ago that there was a movement of charter schools in New York City, I don't know what part, where they were paying their teachers over $100,000 a year. And the performance level of those teachers was off the charts. In some of the third world countries, teachers are regarded as important as doctors are, and they get the same respect that doctors get. Now, I understand that you are affiliated with a charter school now, am I right?
Yes, I'm working in a charter school now.
Are they under the banner of that kind of a salary that I just mentioned?
I really don't know the salary scale for the teachers.
Okay.
I do know that given the circumstances that we're facing coming out of COVID and hinging on the peril of having another pandemic knock on our window pane sometime in the near early, late fall and early winter, that salary in right now is not the magnet that's bringing teachers in. We're having teachers and charter as well in public. Like they can't do it anymore. They're burnt out. They themselves are dealing with mental challenges, mental health issues. And they, quite honestly, some of the folks I've talked to, Henry, just said they can't do it anymore. They want to, this is it. They're going to go home and get their own lives together.
Wow.
They do not, there's not enough money out there.
Yeah.
There are schools giving signing bonuses.
Yep.
I see them.
Yep.
$5,000 and $10,000 signing bonuses.
Yeah.
And folks are not taking them up. Will not take up the position.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's a travesty, man. I don't know what to say, and I don't know where it's going to all conclude, but there definitely is a crisis in the educational system, I'm telling you, man. I used to do substitute teaching, man, and I met a former person yesterday, and they were telling me that they're offering substitute teachers $235 a day. I said, "Oh my God!" When I substituted, it was $110 a day. Now they're going up to $235 a day, which, you know, let you know how desperate they are for teachers.
And some of them give it as much as $400 a day for a sub.
Oh, man. That's great, Doc. That's really great.
Yes.
Really good. Good, good. Now, let me ask you, as you look back over your life and the many, many accomplishments that you have achieved to God's glory, what stands out in your mind as your greatest achievement? When I look at, and I don't even want to interrupt this or even, you know, when I look at the fact that you were superintendent of a school district, that is really an achievement on the highest level. But from your perspective, what was your highest level of achievement and satisfaction in your journey?
I really get the joy of knowing that I can dial back and look at students that I was blessed to teach the first year out of college.
Mm.
And I still have a relationship with them. I know who they are.
Wow.
I can name them. We still keep in touch.
Wow.
And to see where they are thriving. And those who my DNA has been a part of their journey through the years, I'm getting teared up right now because I know that is my ministry. Mm. I always tell folks, education is my ministry.
It's beautiful.
And I don't want to do anything that I can't make an impact.
Yeah.
Because we all can chase the dollar bill.
Yeah.
And go home empty. I have turned down jobs that were giving me lucrative incomes, salary.
Yeah.
But I have to ask myself, where's the impact?
Yeah, yeah.
How am I going to make a difference in the lives of the individuals that I'm working with?
Mm.
And everything bursts back to my work in education. And it speaks volumes. Because I remember, I can tell you, Henry, the first year that I taught, some of the luminaries that the students that I taught are now luminaries, like Dr. Alicia Robinson.
Mm.
She's Elder Sandy Robinson's daughter.
Yeah.
And then there's Dr. Rhonda Robinson, who is now a full professor at in North Carolina at Crimson.
Mm.
She runs the Black Institution there.
Wow.
In literacy. It humbles you.
Yeah.
Or I'm looking at one of my students by the name of Linda Norman, who's a senior flight attendant at American.
Wow.
And those are just some of the few that I can name. Or even Ronnie Woodfork, who sings with the
Breath of Life.
Breath of Life.
Yeah.
He was my student.
Wow.
Yeah, and when I see them, I said, "Don't you dare call me Mr. Mim. It's Stanley now."
Yeah.
Because you're going to date me.
Yeah.
But I look at them and like, Lord, I'm so blessed to have been a part of their journey.
Yeah, that's great, man. Now, you said when you first started teaching, where was that when you came out of school?
This was at Atlanta, Georgia, at the Berean Junior Academy.
Okay. Now, but did you have your doctorate at the time, or your
fresh out of college? Just a BA.
Okay. All right. Very good.
In fact, wait a minute. When I started teaching there, I didn't have my bachelor's as of yet.
Oh. Okay.
I had two courses left to do.
Okay.
And the conference official said, "Wait, you can get that while you're working at the church school there."
Yeah.
So I said, "Okay," and I did it.
Okay.
I did it.
Okay. All right, very good.
And then I went on to finish everything.
Okay, yeah. Dynamite, man. Did you go straight through, or did you take a break in between BA, master's, and doctorate?
You know, I think I just kept going.
Okay. Good.
I just kept going.
Yeah. Smartest thing to do. Let me ask you, man, in terms of your administration, where did you find yourself to be the most creative? I mean, sometimes a necessity...
When I have a boss who leaves me alone, I don't work well. I don't work well with people who are not sure of themselves. I'm going to share this with everyone.
Yeah.
You have to know your whole understanding of what helps you to thrive in your field.
Uh-huh.
First of all, my rule is I never work with anyone who has low self-esteem.
Oh, wow.
So as I'm interviewing people, when I interview a job, I listen to the interviewer, especially the ones I'm going to be reporting to. If I sense that their esteem level is not at my level or higher, because I'm into frequency now. Even my friendships got to be at my frequency or higher. I'm not going to go lower because it takes too much energy to deal with someone who's just always serving up hate every morning. Or looking at the glass as truly being half empty. We don't have time for that now. Okay. If you're going to move forward in your own universe of being giving back and supporting your own lift. So the first thing I do, I always listen to who I'm going to be working for.
Yeah.
Get a sense of the organization. And then I also look at their education accomplishment.
Okay.
If I don't get a sense that they've been thriving, they could have a BA, but what are they doing in the meantime? Are they engaged in community affairs? Are they active in some organization that keeps them fueled? Because we got to always realize what's going into the ID every day that helps you to keep your sense, your pulse on the career that you're in.
Yeah.
So they're not well read.
Yeah.
Forget the well bred.
Yeah.
Forget it. Because they don't get it. I have tried to instill that. In fact, I instilled it in the people I support. I said, "What are you reading?"
Yeah.
If you tell me you're on Netflix every night or Hulu or Zulu, that ain't that you means you missed the loop.
Unless
you're doing a class in that platform.
Yeah, that's great. That's great, man. That's great. You know, with that kind of mentality, the only thing you can do for people is around you and who you mentor and teach is empower them. That's the kind of mentality that empowers people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm impressed. You know, I don't think enough people work on frequency. There's a spiritual dimension in our lives that we've got to be totally aware of and take advantage of it when we are dealing with people. It's not the outer man, it's the inner man that you've got to be very conscious of. So that is really that's worth all the education you got, my friend. It really is.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. Did you have, but you know, you worked in a bureaucratic field, a lot of bureaucracy in the education, especially public education. So I would assume that there were many times when you were frustrated because the people above you did not have the creativity or insight that you had to be able to do the things you wanted to do. Now, if I'm not right, just correct me. Did you find yourself frustrated at times?
I would say yes. In some instances, yes. But prayer changes things. I put people on the altar. I'm going to tell you like that. I put the job on the altar. I put projects on the altar. I pray my way through. My daily routine, in fact, I wrote about this in my LinkedIn post, that it's incumbent upon us that as one of the things that gets your day going, you've got to first stop and meditate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Get centered.
Yeah.
Once I get myself centered, then I'm asking God to go ahead, go before me and make the rough places plain and the crooked straight, borrowing something from the scriptures there.
Yeah.
That, yeah, yeah. And helping folks to, it helps me as someone who got to come in positive.
Yeah.
Because I can't deal in the negative behavior.
Yeah.
And through the years, as I had a boss once in, when I was working in Kansas City, Kansas, Henry, that said, used to say, know what you want or learn to live with what you get.
Mm.
No truer words ever spoken. Yeah. Know what you want or learn to live with what you get.
Wow.
That was the ethos that kept my lens forward. So when I see things not going in the fashion I wanted, that I think it should go, and using data to support my conversation. This is not based on epiphany now. I'm not going to come in here. This is what the data says we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting pushback from whoever is in, I would like to say, in the way, because they are the tripping on their own ego.
Mm-hmm.
I have to figure out how to work around them. And I pray about them. And you know, when I put them on the altar, God makes a way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And moves it out the way. Or show me how to get out their way.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow. Amazing. Now, you were born in Atlanta. Tell me about that.
Yeah.
You were born in Atlanta. Did you grow up in a Christian home?
I was born in Atlanta. I grew up in a Christian home. We were raised Baptist.
Okay.
So it was that whole mystique of going to church every Sunday morning. Well, first of all, you had to sing in the choir.
Okay.
That was Saturday evening. We would be at the church choir, all of us. My cousins, my siblings, all of us were a part of that journey there. So that was a part of the Baptist church. In fact, from time to time, I'll go by my former Baptist church building just to see what it's like, or pass by, realize that's where it started. And then eventually I became a Seventh-day Adventist later on.
Okay, and how did that happen?
Through the life and teachings of my mentor, who's no longer with us. We buried him in, March of 2021? The late Malcolm James Dean. Malcolm James Dean.
Okay, all right.
Yes.
Okay, okay. Okay, all right. Now, in your home, what was the relationship like with you and your siblings? And even what was the relationship like with you and your parents, the culture in the home?
It was supportive.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know I was poor, Henry, until I went off to college and they showed me what my mama was making. And my father, mom and daddy were making. That's when they gave you the little scale when you fill out for your financial aid.
Yeah.
Then I realized we were living at the poverty level. But I didn't know because I didn't want for anything. We lived in the projects in Atlanta.
Yeah, man.
Quite honestly, I used to think if you didn't live in the projects, then you missed out. So if I saw friends and single homeless, you're not living.
Yeah.
That's such a skewed life, right?
You're telling my story, man, because, you know, both parents were working, But we were poor. I mean, you know, we were poor. And I didn't know anything about poor because every morning I had, you know, cream of wheat or wheatina or oatmeal. Mom and Dad, we had beans, you know. But my, and every time I would go to school, sometimes with holes in my shoes, we had to put cardboard to cover the hole.
I've done that, too. Yeah. You know, I know your mother and father. Your mother could cook. When I met your mother at Brooklyn Temple Church in Brooklyn, and she came up to me and said, do you know my son Henry? I said, Sister Holt, I stayed at your house. It was Henry who rescued me when I came to New York in 19, we're not going to call that.
Yeah.
When I was on my way to go to Victory Lake to serve as a camp counselor, it was Henry who came and picked me up and brought me to your house where you fed me royally.
Yeah.
Over in East New York, I remember.
Yeah. I tell you, Stan, those were the days, man. And I tell you, long gone are those days because they will never be recaptured or reinstated. Family was family, love was love, and all of those other kinds of gorgeous things that no longer exist, man, I'm telling you.
I know.
Yeah, but what motivated you to go to college?
It was my mentor, Malcolm James Dean, who really got, I never forget, when I had finished high school, right, you're supposed to have your mission letter in your hand, and everyone's talking about, are they going to college? Well, I finished high school, graduated, and had not applied to Oakwood College. It was Malcolm James Dean, whose son is Stephen James Dean, who became my brother in all the truest sense, who sat me down and had me apply to Oakwood, got me admitted to Oakwood in less than 24 hours, collaborated with the late Elder Warren S. Banfield, Sr., who worked his blessings, got me financial aid, and the rest is history.
Yeah.
Because when Malcolm James Dean was my mentor, it was Elder and Mrs. Banfield who stepped in and filled the gap and just gave me support along the way of my journey. And then they passed me over to Henry and Leela Alexander. Who kept me focused throughout that whole, the years at Oakwood and beyond.
Wow.
The likes of George Scurry, that I still call aunt. Being an only Adventist at that time could have been a bad move if you didn't have mentors.
Yeah.
So I learned from them how to be a mentor to other people, because I watched them. They were truly sermons in shoes.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, how long was it since you became an Adventist that you went to Oakwood? I mean,
I became an Adventist my senior year of high school.
Okay. And you went straight to Oakwood?
I went to Oakwood.
Whoa.
That August.
You know, I'm just listening to you. So your whole orientation about Adventism came at Oakwood.
Right.
Yeah. So you really became an Adventist at Oakwood. I mean, because that seemed, you know, everything that, and you could not have been in a better environment to be molded and shaped, because Oakwood College is the epitome of the joy, you know. And I was telling some others about morning worship, man. You were the closest to heaven when you were in morning worship, singing those songs, man. Harmonizing, coming from the windows, you walking down the campus and hearing that music come from them dormitories, boy, you're as close to heaven as you ever get.
And to that point, both of them, I'm so proud to say that I have a third generation of Oakwood family members there. My daughter, my oldest daughter attended there, my youngest daughter attended and graduated, and now I have my grandsons there. They're, one's a junior and another's a freshman. And they're loving it.
That's
and to
great,
see
man.
Them walk around and they ask, well, Papa, where did you, I said, listen, you all have more buildings on this campus than I did when I was there.
Yes.
But that's what you call progress and blessing.
You can hardly recognize the campus now. US compared to what it was when we were there. And when we were there, it was glorious. I mean, it was good. And, you know, we were glorifying how beautiful the campus was at that time. But when you go back today, boy, eyes have not seen nor ears heard, you know.
You better preach.
Yeah, man.
You better preach.
Yeah, yeah. Now, who were your colleagues at Oakwood?
Well, my roommate from college and still great friend and brother, George Edward Jackson, Pastor George Edward Jackson. That was my roommate and I guess you say my running buddy.
Yeah. He's retired now, right?
He's retired now and lives out in Cali.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, who else influenced you? Anybody on campus or a teacher, anybody that, you know, you looked up to and was a role model or somebody that influenced you?
I would say the late Clarence T. Richards. Everyone had to go by doctor. Clarence T. Richards in his class for students who did not have the privilege of going through an Adventist school system. You always have to go to the basic classes in his classes and all things Bible knowledge or for Seventh-day Adventist students.
Yeah,
he was always right there to support that whole lift.
Yeah. No deviation from strict integrity
will meet God's approval. That's what I was trying to pull out. You hit it. Look at you. You just bloom where you planted. You remember. It's in your DNA.
Yeah, man. Yeah. C.T. Richards was something, man. You know, one of the things about him, he was very spiritual, like Elder Mosley. They were the kind of prophets of the campus and of the church back in those days. When Elder Mosley would give a week of prayer at Oakwood College, boy, he had the unction and the anointing of the Holy Spirit, man. Truly men of God, you know.
Another value add was Dr. Mervyn Warren,
Senior. Yeah.
I remember in his classes, he shared with us. And that's a part of my collective thinking and practice, even as we speak, Henry.
Yeah,
he said that whenever he is going through experiencing some drama in his life, he always reflect to see how he can either support others or give a little extra to the church in terms of financial support. And he said it always brought a whole different view. You took you moved from looking at the poor me situation to how can be a value add to others, to the church.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. I put that in my practice. When I'm going through some dark time, I say, wait a minute, let me give an offering somewhere.
That's beautiful.
Who can I lift up along the way?
Yeah, that's right.
Because it does deflect. It does move forward off of you. And Amen. You feel better.
I'm telling you, man.
And I thank Dr. Mervyn Warren for that.
Yeah, that's selflessness on the highest level, man. That's good. I think about what comes to mind when I think about Oakwood. I think about Dr. Plummer. I think about Elder Beal, who had a lot of trauma in his life. You know, I wasn't too privy to the innuendos of the struggles that he had, but it was very evident that in his family there were a lot of struggles. But that guy would come to class. I don't know if anybody on campus loved God more than Elder Beal, boy. I tell you the truth, that guy would start his classes even before the class started. Talking about God, man, and he really, you know, his communication was not just a textbook communication. It was coming from the depths of his heart, you know?
Right. And his wife was also a real supportive person. We used to call her Mother Bill because she was so much a part of the fabric of the students on campus.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, man, I didn't really want to get off too much into the Oakwood thing, even though we ended up there. But I am extremely happy, Dr. Mims, that you allowed me. You know, we have been trying to pull this off for some time, and there's been many interruptions, but finally we were able to pull it off today. And I'm so happy, man, because it has only endeared me to you to see and understand your journey. I'm very proud of you.
I am so humbled. Yeah. You've always been a North Star to really examine and think about your next steps. I mean, look at you, Henry.
Yeah.
You're still thriving. Yeah. You're writing. We know you're a prolific writer. Come
yeah.
on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Forget to as well as a speaker. But I just love the fact that you're living what you want to live.
Yeah, yeah.
You're speaking your truth. You're being intentional and staying present.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I thank God, too. I thank God for that because I'm, you know, I'm knocking on the door not too long from 80. Still got a good mind. And not only that.
Your best years are not too far away. Your best years. You haven't even touched them yet.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, man. And there's no way will I lay down my weapons until I lay them down on the sea of
time.
You know, I'm going to die with my boots on by the grace of God.
Mm-hmm.
But Stan, I thank you so much, man. And I do hope that in the very near future, you will carve out some more time and be a blessing to our listening audience. And what I also want you to consider is maybe once you settle down, because I know you're still working, you can do a weekly show. A program, broadcast of any choosing of your liking, whatever topic you would like to choose.
I would welcome that.
Yeah, to be able to give back again, even in your retirement years. So can I kind of hang my hat on that?
Hey, let me say this. I call my retirement retreading. You're putting retreads on my tires. That's what I'm doing now.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Because I really enjoy giving back.
That's good. That's good. And you know what I would say? There's something about getting old because you can look back at people who are coming up.
Excuse me, getting old? Well, you mean, I always tell my children, I don't say as I continue to mature, not age.
No, that's it.
And
that's
they
it.
All crack up. My grandson said, what? As you continue to mature.
There you go. There you
and
go.
It's like, oh, that's different, Papa. That's different.
Yeah. You know, when you look back and you see people coming up in your footsteps, there's so much insight that you have. You know, you have now become groomed, or shall I say, seasoned. And, you know, so your contribution in conversations with people who are in the same profession, who are coming up behind you, has so much substance because you're giving it from a seasoned perspective. And I like talking to younger guys about ministry and about a lot of other things because I'm able to pour into them my experiences in life, and I really enjoy it.
And that's crucial. And you do have, when you review your library, of experiences, you're able to share that.
Yes, absolutely.
And you're able to mentor them accordingly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Stan, I don't know what's on your agenda for the rest of the day, but I'm going to wish you God's blessings.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I'm about to go hit the gym right now. I remember the time I used to wave at the gym door, hey, see you, wouldn't want to be you.
Yeah.
Now I have to do it.
I love it.
No options anymore. I got to go in.
That's right. I appreciate
and
that.
And be intentional and taking care of me.
That's right.
At this point in time in my life.
And it will pay off in the final analysis too.
Yes, yes. So I look forward to us getting together soon.
We will, Stan.
Because, you know, but I'm not far from you.
Yeah.
Down in South, you know, where I am now, I can come up and visit and break bread.
Anytime you want to do it, baby, the doors.
Enjoy some of my vegan food.
Yeah.
And take you to a vegan place.
Okay.
Plant-based.
All right. I need it. My doors are always open.
Okay, take care.
God bless you, my friend. Have a good day.
Thanks for the opportunity to share.
Yes, bless you, my friend. God bless.
Thank you.
Sure. Take care.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.